Greetings, this is the automatically deleted husband, and let's start off with the joyous reception of a postcard. Yes, refused by my wife again. You know, this was the one, I have remarkable dialogues on my Molech video. Our kids need to know that kind of challenge. Is it not an act of love? Yes, it was an act of love. This, like all those on the wall there, it's an act of hate. And the woman I love and committed my life to, and she committed her life to me. Does it hurt? Why, yes, it does. A number of things. Some lighter stuff first. You know, I saw, I've discussed in years past, the city of Mosul in northern Iraq. Because it's well known, it's actually indirectly mentioned in the Bible, because it surrounds Nineveh. It's Nineveh province. The city is within it, and then there's the old city of Nineveh as a walled city, rather small, and within that walled city is a monument to Jonah. And I pointed out how ISIS at the time, blew it up because of their attitude towards monuments. But they blew it up. But you know, there's the eastern part of the city on the river, and the western part has what's called the old city, which is dominated by the Islamic community. But in that area is Christian and Muslim. And there was just a recent report I saw where a church that was destroyed, not totally destroyed, but significantly destroyed, had reopened and started services again. This is one of these really ornate I don't know if it's Roman Catholic or something of that nature, a big group with all the ornate stuff. And so they started having services again. And the thought I had is, some people will say they destroyed the church building or the church. But no, you cannot destroy the church. You can destroy church buildings, but you cannot destroy the church, because the church is not made buildings. It's not an institution. It's people. And it is the Lord's people. And the Lord holds them fast. You cannot destroy the church. But anyway, I found that interesting. Secondly, I don't know if you know, there's been a little bit of turmoil in Sri Lanka for some time. Especially in the last several weeks, it got really tense. And in the last few days, there's been massive crowds in front of their government buildings and so forth, and the presidential palace, and they stormed the palace. And you have pictures where because of the fact that it has the steps on both sides in order to get, it has the large steps up front, but I think it says where there's some places where the steps going up from both sides. It looked like January 6th in the U.S. I mean, it was kind of like the same kind of crowd and whatnot. And, you know, I remember the images in January 6th of people politely walking through the Capitol and whatnot, and mixed with those people who were being pushy and so forth. So you had the mix of both. Well, here you had the same kind of thing. When they got into the president's house, bunch of people got into his bedroom and laid on his bed and things of that nature, you know, and they are and apparently continue to using things like there's an exercise room and whatnot. And they got to his pool, a very large pool, and you have bunches of people jumping in the pool and whatnot. The difference is, this truly is an insurrection, because the president and a number two guy, I forget what position he is, said, okay, we resign. We're out of here. They're in an undisclosed location, and apparently they say they will officially resign on Wednesday. But so the in a very real sense, the government of Sri Lanka was overthrown. Didn't happen in the U.S. But anyway, but you know, the similarities I thought were so fascinating. It all depends upon how you want to look at it. It really is interesting. But there's another place where those kind of things happen. Obviously, it's been happening for years, the Yellow Vest protests in France that continue. There were all the protests about the Green Pass or the vaccine passports and things of that nature in numerous places in Europe, and those still continue. And of course, in the Netherlands, the government has decided we have to cut down on greenhouse gases because that are emitted from cows belching. Literally, from cows belching. So they've gone to the farmers and say, you gotta cut this down. And the farmers said, no. And they showed up with their tractors and their trucks in really large numbers and relatively polite, nice, organized and whatnot. And some of the things I thought were fascinating because, you know, they have these trucks that are used to spray whether it's seeds or just simply grass and whatnot, over a large area as they drive by. Well, they had one of those, and they were spraying it against the rows of cops. It's just kind of like, yeah, okay, you're going to sit there in all your body armor and whatnot, and we're just going to spray you with wheat or something, you know, it just whatever. It was funny. But they also sprayed them with, you know, problems the cows. So they sprayed them with cow dung in some places. And so it's been interesting because what are they doing? They're self-destructing. Because if you don't let your farmers farm, your people don't eat. You might notice a relationship there. You know, and it's interesting how the EU, by being pressured by the U.S., you know, they have numerous pipelines that are coming in order to provide gasoline and natural gas in order to do things like heat homes because it gets cold. A lot of that is coming from Russia. And one of the major pipelines is called Nord Stream 1. And there's some kind of turbine or whatever, you know, to pump things through. And apparently it was either made or at least it's repaired in Canada. And then Canada put this turbine, which apparently happens every couple of years, whatever, heads to Canada. They do the repairs and they ship it back. Now, I think this is a very, very large item. But then, of course, there are the sanctions. So they decided not to ship it back. And the problem is Nord Stream 1 now is working at reduced capacity. So they're saying Russia is not providing the gas. It's kind of like the logic. I mean, this is the stupidity here is amazing. So Canada is cutting off, literally cutting off the gas flow into Europe. So they blame Russia. Apparently, through some twisting and turning, Canada is returning the equipment in order to get Nord Stream 1 back up to full capacity. Again, it's only partial capacity. And then, of course, because of the pressure of the U.S., Nord Stream 2, which was supposed to be online a year ago, has been canceled. And Germany in particular, because of all the Green Party and whatnot there, they're shutting down all their coal-fired power plants and, you know, heating and things of that nature, as well as the nuclear plants, because they're moving to green energy. And natural gas is relatively green compared to coal. It's quite clean. And apparently there's some very good sources. For example, the U.S. has, I think it's estimated about 1,000-year supply. Same with Russia. So there's plenty. But you can't deal with Russia. Because, I mean, oh no, don't do that. So they canceled Nord Stream 2. They reduce the flow from Nord Stream 1. And prices are going up for some reason. I wonder why that is. And they're turning back on the coal plants because they're preparing for winter. Because it looks like Europe, especially Germany, is going to have a cold winter. Not because of Russia, but because they, you know, they were so convinced that they have to do it this way. And again, one of the things you have to understand is that a lot of places within Europe, it's true here in the United States in a lot of places, because when you have big buildings or when you have some small cities, the hot water is centralized. It's not the, you know, right there behind the t-shirt, my NSA t-shirt, you know, the NSA, the only part of government that really listens to that t-shirt. That's my water heater. And, I know a neighbor just around the corner, theirs failed a while back, and it didn't impact me. But if we had a community one, when it turns off, no one has hot water. You know, that's why they're talking about cut your shower short, do it a few degrees cooler and things of that nature, and wear a sweater at home and stuff of that nature. That's the mentality of these people. Because they want to stick it to Russia. And I'm sorry, what's happened to Russia? Their economy is booming. The ruble went down for, you know, a few weeks, and now is as strong as ever. It's one of the strongest currencies in the world. And they're selling gas to China, to India, and a whole lot of other countries. They have no issue with selling their product. And they used to sell it at a cheap price to Europe. And Europe is just going, we don't want your gas anymore. And therefore, they're going to pay a higher price. And I think just like we see in the Netherlands, we're going to see that happen throughout Europe. Again, there was Global Governance Conference, World Governance, whatever, because there's so many of them. Where someone who is well-placed in the one of the central banks, I think, of Europe. Because, again, the central banks are, well, centralized. At the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland. I mean, this is not a neat idea. I mean, it's there. It's been there for years, you know. And again, the thing I find fascinating, because the Bank of International Settlements, it's a round building, but the way it tapers at the bottom, if you look at the building, it looks like a boot. And that has been well noticed by many, because what is that organization? It's basically a boot in the world. You know, if you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever. From George Orwell, his 1984 book. And somebody used that quote in, I think, what was it called? Proverbs 1984. Oh, yes. But anyway... You see that collapse happening. The price of heating and fuel and whatnot in many places in Europe and the UK have gone up anywhere from 50% to three times. Just like the Netherlands, there's going to be a reaction. Just like the yellow vests in Paris, that's been going on now for like 2 or 3 years, there's going to be a reaction. You saw the same thing in Canada. Obviously, with the trucker protest, where the government forcibly shut them down. And, of course, shut down their bank accounts, too. You saw it mirrored in the U.S. And now it's happening again all around. Because that has been the model. And it's happening in a lot of places. It's happening in Australia. It's happening in other places. There's a similar version that happened in India for different reasons. But, again, it was because of the government overreach. So these things are happening, and I do wonder, because governments are becoming more oppressive. That global governance or global conference, the statement was that Europe will go total digital currency within 2 years. Again, you want a picture of the future? Imagine a boot. that's what that is, because as soon as they can get control of electronic currency, centralized electronic currency, and Bitcoin is centralized, it's logically distributed, but are physically distributed, but it's logically centralized. Get that straight. And it can be controlled. And you've actually seen it in the way the price fluctuation. It's a gambler's paradise. It's not rational. But when you have the state-run currencies, they have control. They want stability. But they can, you know, we have financial issues. They can effectively inflate the price and therefore get rid of, you know, public debt, for example. And the other thing they can do is, you said the wrong thing. You're not complying. Your bank account is frozen or reduced, or we're going to take some of it. I mean, that happened in Greece. Was it 2-3 years ago? Where because of the financial difficulties Greece was having and continues to have, they simply went to everybody's bank account and took a percentage. Just like that. The government just stole it from its own people. So these things happen. Canada is becoming very authoritarian, and do you think it won't happen in the U.S.? If you don't think it'll happen in the U.S., you are naive. Something else. And then there's a major thing. I have a friend who I knew many years ago here locally. He moved to Florida. Every once in a while, we have an email exchange, and we did over the weekend. And he's a little bit younger than I am. Not by much, but a little bit younger than I am. When I knew him, he was riding a bike and good health. Right now, he's in a wheelchair and having all sorts of difficulties. And it reminded me of a lot of other people I know who are his age or even younger. And they're all dead. And, you know, I did try to write to encourage him. But one of the other things that was important, I've been wondering why. Why in the Lord's grace? I know very few, very, very few, who are my age, or in some cases older, who are in good health. Why am I in excellent health? Again, a 9-mile hike in 2 hours is kind of just ho-hum, it's normal. I'm reliably doing 1,000 jumping jacks. Today I did almost 1,500 each day. Not a problem. Why do I have a good state of health and watch other people collapse? I don't know, but I'm thankful for God's grace. Because some of the people I know that are in poor health have family around them. Some don't, like Larry, my friend in Florida. I don't have family around. I need to be in good health or I'm toast. And I take this very seriously. That's why I start every morning with 500 jumping jacks. Just like most guys, right? I sent a postcard today. You know, one of these, and I expect, like this one, in a week or so, I'll get it back. It was sent to George, my son. I wrote him. You wrote me long ago stating, I wish we were family again. I still share that and wrote you many times. Love, Dad. You know, because, again, remember, I'm his dad. My wife, Dorothy Jane Kozlowski, that woman there, she and I, we got together on more than one occasion, and she ended up pregnant, and oh, George is one of the results, and George is my son. You'll find today on the website for today, you know, the link is there, or is it there? Wherever it is. It'll be there. I'm looking at the picture. It'll be there. Okay. There was a lot of, you know, he sent me an email long ago. This was in November of 2019, long ago. He sent me an email. I responded in email over and over and over again. I responded written. I responded in video form. I haven't heard a thing from him. And that's now, what, 3 years? Like this, that is hate. You're going to George and saying, George, you know, see, what I don't understand is my wife forwarded George's message. My wife did this so I could read his message and then denied the communications. You know, you see, again, as I pointed out, it's one thing to take these cards when they come in and simply throw them away. It's another thing to return them. One, this one isn't because it's to my wife, but the ones to my kids, when you return it, it's against the law. I mean, plain and simple, it's against the law. The terms that my wife signed, it's against the law. So she appeals to the state against me, but she doesn't live by it. And I love that lady. I love that lady. And I love George. So, and, you know, I had the link. Dear George, I too wish for a family again, from November 26th, 2019. And I listened to it. It hurts. But it went beyond that. Because one of the other things I've thought about is I have a picture. Because, and you know, this gets into, I'm going to get really long. Oh, gee. This gets, because again, the way things connect, the way there's, I would suggest some consistency here. Years ago, you know, the story is well known and well understood. We were in Lexington. We went to the local doctor to take George, our baby, to have him vaccinated at the time. Shortly thereafter, we noticed there was an impact. We stopped with the vaccinations. And we didn't vaccinate anyone else since. At least I hope not. Sometime later, I did the video Vaxxed came out. And as I had previously mentioned, I bought the disc and I sent it to the mother of my grandchild, Charlotte, because she was still in the oven, I think, at the time. And because I was concerned, I wanted Julia and Isaac to have the information in front of them. So they had heard somebody else say, no, don't do this. When I bought the disc, I went to, at the time I was going to the juice bar at Abundant Living, a local health food store. And I talked with a person that I had developed kind of a friendly relationship with behind the register. And she mentioned that her child, a little bit older, they gave a vaccine to, and I mean, several years old, gave a vaccine to, and then they stopped talking. And it was many, many months before they started talking again. And I said I had the disc. And I gave them that first disc I had, and then I bought another one to send to Julia. But then they came out with, they were doing the filming for Vax 2, a follow-up. And they were doing a tour, and they were in Chattanooga. So I informed this lady about that. And apparently it was too late. But eventually Vax 2 came out. I got it. I got two copies. One I gave to a friend, and one I offered again to Julia, and I think I still have it because, again, at that point, I didn't have an address. I'm pretty sure I still have it. But I watched it myself. And the whole premise of that is they did Vaxxed, the first video, and then they did the tour around the nation. And what they did is they got an RV, painted it, you know, with the Vaxxed logo on it. And as they went from city to city, they went to meet people who had been impacted by vaccines. And they had them sign their name on the outside of the bus. And this got to me. And that's why on June 3rd, 2020, in my email, the cover, the photo I used, because I'm pretty sure that was just audio at the time. Just audio at the time. But I had the picture of the bus, and I overlaid in the picture, George, ? Because I've been asking the question, should George's name be in that bus? That's my son. I think some people don't understand. George is my son. George obviously has been very fond of wearing ties, my ties often. I've sent him several. He's requested, and I've sent him several. In one case, I sent him a tie. And on February 19th, you'll see that I have the picture. And in that case, I believe, yes, indeed, it was a video that I did. Because it's titled, George's Unclaimed Tie. You know, I sent the tie to George. It was returned. You know, sound familiar? Again, against man's law. The excuse, if I recall correctly, the excuse is I was slightly short on postage. So it came postage due. If that's it, that may be the one. I know I that have at least once. So instead of paying the postage, they returned it. And I sent it again later with plenty of postage. And if I recall correctly, I didn't. This one was sent to the P.O. box. I sent it straight to the house. And I've been sending it straight to the house ever since. So where's love? Where's love for my wife? Towards George. Where's love from my wife to her son, George? Again, I love that lady. There's also, I'll give you the link from August 12th of 2020. You know, frequently I mention typically a comic or something from Babylon B. They did something that was serious. The title was, No One Should Die Alone. This was the story of a gentleman whose wife apparently caught, at least was attributed to COVID-19, and she was put in the hospital and isolated. She was not in the best physical shape in the first place, but so she was isolated for something several weeks. They would not let her husband see her or her son until 6 hours after she was dead. But the idea, no one should die alone. One of the things that hit me, and I actually wrote them. One of the things that is, I think, fairly clear to me. I'm going to die alone. I did also have a link here from January 17th of 2020. George, be a student of yourself and encouraging commitment. You know, because one of the things was, this was student yourself. I mention this so often in reference to your own health, because you are not like the person next to you. So what works for you doesn't work for the next person next to you, and vice versa. You have to know you and treat yourself accordingly. And I would suggest that's why I'm in such good health, because I'm a student myself. So there's a lot there trying to encourage George. I also have links to three others. These were just audio. But again, I listened to them again this weekend, because those three, as a pair, when you get to one, they're all linked together, because they were very important. It was from December 22nd of 2020, then January 6th of 2021, and February 24th of 2021. And it was... The one that's most important, if you watch any of them, I really think it's the January 6th, 2021. Because it's called Genesis Apologetics, John and Jane. I have a lot of respect for the group Genesis Apologetics. They're out of California. It amazes me. How could you do something out of California? Although they grow great almonds and great garlic. Yeah, I mean, the food there is marvelous, especially if you get the organic stuff, not the, anyway. Because the environment is great for growing. But they have done some superb work on a variety of things. And obviously, the strong focus is on creation and things relative to them. And this one really hit me strong, because they did the video. A young guy and a young girl come up in front of a blank wall and start talking. He's wearing the shirt that says creation. She's wearing a shirt that says evolution. His name is John, and her name is Jane. Yes, I noticed that. I noticed that very strongly. And they go back and forth and back and forth. He's taken the creation position. Some of the things he said, you know, he does mention Jesus and Jesus's creation. So, I mean, that's even within the Christian community, that's provocative. She does a lot of things, talks about, you know, evolution and whatnot. And then they go back and forth. Then they have a moment where they both together say, stop. And they do the Deuteronomy, I set before you life and death, those kind of things. And they do it back and forth superbly. Really superbly. And the way it ends, she's wearing this black shirt. She grabs it by the neck and pulls it forward, because it's obviously not bound behind her. She pulls it forward and has the creation shirt underneath. And says, I really hope this makes you think. It was superbly done. Dorothy Jane, you're wearing a shirt that has, I trust the state on it. Not I trust the Lord. That's the shirt I'm wearing. Dorothy Jane, rip off that shirt and show the shirt underneath that you used to claim that you trust the Lord. Please. You're trusting the state. You're trusting the world. You are no different than what Eric Lee has done. You essentially have become an atheist. When you say Jesus is the Redeemer, that's true, absolutely true, of his elect. And when you say no to obedience to him, when you say no, when you show this kind of hate, overt hate. You're given evidence that you say, oh, no, no, I'm part of the club. I don't need to be part of the elect. I'm just part of the club. It scares me beyond everybody. You know, your picture's on the wall for a reason. Below that picture, you see that Dottie Jane Loves John that you wrote 30-some years ago. Apparently, it was a lie. I put on a ring that you placed on my hand. It has probably been off less than a minute in the last 30-some years. Again, I mentioned when it fell off in the sink because I had soapy stuff in my hands and it fell off. It's kind of like, that was the first time in probably well over 10 years. And it didn't stay off long. I mean, it was back on within seconds. It's just a symbol. You wore a symbol like that. It's sitting on top of the frame of that picture. You once wrote that you were willing to put it back on. You're like our government. You can't be trusted. Eric Lee wrote, these are her words, where it says, they are one till death. I had to make sure, because I keep saying until death. No, it's one till death. She wrote those words. Again, if you watch the video and the words that she asked me to do the voiceover, those are her words that she asked me to read. I'm living those words. I'm living this. I'm keeping the promise. Erica Lee, you know, she had on her website. The website is down. But she was holding up the picture and she distorted the link. Well, here. Even more. A new one so you can see it clearly. Kozlowska.org/promise. All the pictures of the cards that are sent out and this one already, the return version, it's online. They're there. And my concern, going back to George, what happens? You're keeping it from George, obviously. Does he know? Have you trained him to hate his dad? Or have you been successful in keeping his dad from him? What happens if one day George, Susanna, Glory Jane, Walter, or Zadok find out all the cards that were sent to them? Mom, why didn't you let me see this? Mom, Dad was trying to reconcile the family. Why didn't you? Mom, Dad is committed to you. You committed to him. Do I follow Dad's model or yours? Isaac seems to be following yours. I love my wife. I have been very careful in the last couple days because I am concerned about tomorrow. Tomorrow is the 15th anniversary of the events of Collateral Murder. And the 10th anniversary of my wife abandoning me. I feel a bit of stress. But you want to know what love is? You want an example of love? Chris, my friend Chris, my brother Chris, has committed tomorrow after work. He's going to drive down from Athens to Charlotte, to Chattanooga, to Cleveland, where I live, and we're going to go take a hike, have a meal together. so I'm not alone on this day, that day, tomorrow. It's called an act of love. I wish my wife knew how to do that. I'm striving to do that to her. I've got a long voicemail again. Dorothy Jane, my lady, my wife, you know beyond doubt, I have never turned from you. You've been my one and only lady every day of my life. There's been no one else but you. I'm committed to you and you alone. I am keeping the promise. And you know beyond doubt, I will do that till my last breath. My guess is, considering my state of health, quite probably my last breath may be decades from now. And probably those decades, I will not see you and probably not our kids, right? Because you can't afford to have me see the kids. Because if the kids find out, everything collapses. And you can't afford that, can you? The only way it would work is you've had someone who would offer you grace. Take a look at my face. I'm the one offering you grace. I'm the one that loves you. I'm the one that will do whatever I can to ease reconciliation. Some months ago, I started a series and I did, 9 videos? Yes, 9 videos. To try to encapsulate what has happened. Yesterday I watched the first 2, and today I watched number 3. Introduction 3. Whistleblowers. Daniel Hale, Norma McCorvey. You should remember us meeting Norma McCorvey. It's ironic, isn't it? She started the Roe No More ministry, and now Roe is no more, which I find fascinating. But the other aspect is Daniel Hale. And let me do the odd again here. Oh, well, I'm at it. Okay, I thought I might have had the vax too. Apparently I did send it. I had 2 others that I was going to send to somebody in my family who wanted it. One was unplanned, because again, remember, I went and saw the lady. She gave a talk here, and I did not address her because my views on abortion have changed. Again, abortion is murder. Don't outlaw it, because I moved from Psalm 139, which is still very valid, to Genesis 1, 128, be fruitful and multiply, and that puts you out of the pro-life community. You should be aware of this. The other one I offered was tortured for Christ, because the thing that really got to me, I saw it online, and then I bought it because I wanted to endorse them. And then they put me on their mailing list, and I kept getting their stuff. And I said, stop this. Don't waste your money, because you're not getting mine. Because I have issues with some things. I think they're probably one of the better Christian organizations, but still. But the point of getting this, is the way they portrayed the beginning of what became a rather big deal for him is he was in a theater where an address was being given. And he wanted to address the group, and he was weighing this, and his wife was sitting next to him, and her words were approximately, I don't want a husband who's a coward. Apparently my wife does. And I'm sorry. What you've done by abandoning me is giving me license to do things. This is a copy because two were printed off. To Daniel Everett Hale, number 26069-075, his prisoner number, in Marion, Illinois. Because I went one step further from that, the intro 3 whistleblower video, I wrote him a personal letter. Because, you know, again, and it's ironic, after doing that, then I watched this again, because I talked about, you know, I did mention Norma McCorvey. I did mention how we met her. Obviously, I did mention a lot about Daniel Hale. Because, again, when I become a lot more emotional for whatever reason. I cannot go through that video or even this one without breaking down. Because, you know, it was a conversation because we were looking at some scripture. I think it was yesterday, maybe today. Because, again, there's a difference between sympathy and empathy. And you will see part of the reason that Christ, the Creator, stepped into his creation as a man was to not just empathize with man, but to sympathize with man. Because to empathize is, I have an intellectual understanding of what you're feeling, but I haven't felt it myself. To sympathize is, I know what you're feeling because I've been through it. Christ has been through it. He can sympathize with us. And the Bible states that directly. Which, again, is fascinating. Reason I write about whistleblowers. Because it's not that I can empathize with them. But I can sympathize with them. Because, you know, it seems to be that the reason I'm a bad person in the eyes of so many. The obvious examples. One would be Volvo, where I went to take a 2-month, 3-month contract, whatever it was. I don't remember, $50, $60 an hour, whatever it was. So it was a good income. You know, as I pointed out, I remember the one of the guys who I was working with reached over one of these barriers, you know, and said, "Slow down." And I can't because that's theft. So I did this multi-week contract. I basically did it 2 weeks. I think they kept me on for 3 and said, "Sorry, we can't just." And the issue is, I'm the bad person. And I have been told this in several places. If they don't want you to work fast, don't work fast. I'm sorry, that's theft. That's theft. And I'm not a thief. Because I've read the Ten Commandments. You shall not steal. It's theft. It's unambiguous theft. So I did a good job. But I'm the bad guy. Because I didn't provide for my family for a longer period of time. Because I wouldn't steal. But then there are other cases. And there have been several. But again, the notable one, because of obviously the 15th anniversary tomorrow of collateral murder, at that same, the people who trained the pilots and the crew in collateral murder. And, you know, quite probably, considering the timing, the leadership at the church we're at, First Presbyterian in Enterprise, they were trainers of Apache helicopter pilots. almost every one of them was. And they quite probably, I think it's likely, they trained the crew of a collateral murder. I think it's likely. Again, because of the photo I have of the day it happened, I was with Susanna, having a date, just her and I. While Mr. Tumal had his girl, and his son in a van. He did the role of a good Samaritan. And this helicopter crew killed him and almost killed his kids. When I pointed out the waste, and it really, it was at least $2 million a year. When I pointed that out, I was fired. And the video, the introduction 3, because I talked about Eric Cochran, who was at Pinterest. And because he exposed something, showed up at work. He exposed it privately, and then he showed up at work because he was found out. His email accounts were shut down and whatnot. And, you know, he noticed it, and a security team came to him and said, grab your stuff, and we're going to walk out with you out the door, and don't come back. And when he said that, because obviously he exposed this through Project Veritas, and when he described that, I lived it. It's not similar. You know, it's not, I can't empathize with them. I can sympathize with them because I know what it's like to have my email accounts shut off, asked to go to the HR department, handed a document, give us your ID, and you can't go back. I know this very well. Why? Because I suppose theft at the same place that Bradley Manning, those people who were trained there, killed a Good Samaritan and a bunch of others, reporters and others, a bunch of civilians. And again, as I point out, the one person in the collateral murder video that showed love is Ethan McCord. And what did he do? He took out of the van two kids, the Tumal kids. And he was persecuted. Boy, this is consistent, isn't it? Tomorrow's the 15th anniversary of that event. Mr. Tumal is dead. What do his kids and his widow think about tomorrow? In a real sense, I can not only empathize, I can sympathize. Because again, 5 years to the day, because you know, the relationship with the people, and then 5 years to the day, my wife abandoned me. And my kids are growing up with effectively, as far as it seems like in North Carolina, I'm dead. Because, you know, when I send my postcards to my kids, they come back. I've used the expression many times. I'm a brokenhearted old man basking in the grace of the Lord. As I point out, the difference between, you know, again, I point to a gentleman in the video, Brandon Bryant. I have his picture in... because I did a video about him, because I can relate. Because, again, he was a drone operator, so he a little bit different. But he and, of course, Daniel Hale talk about the idea of war porn. And, you know, I see the addiction that comes with that, and to break free is remarkably difficult and the impact it has on people. And it gets to the point that you say, I want to give up. And he's the one to put the 45 in his mouth and got distracted by his dog. I'm sure there's a little trepidation involved too. It was kind of like, thank you, give me an excuse. But again, I can relate. Because 10 years ago tomorrow, my wife abandoned me. 10 years ago, the day after, I attempted suicide. Which, by the way, was stupid. It was wrong. It was cowardice on my part. And 7 weeks later, as I've pointed out, I repented. Because I was asking the Lord to end my life. I don't do that anymore. Because I was wrong. I got really long today. Tomorrow, Chris is coming. We're going to take a hike. Quite possibly, I won't do a video tomorrow. I've been somewhat on edge. I've been on edge, but also feeling the Lord's grace. I've been careful. Because I don't want to do something or say something. I even mentioned that to Chris today as we're planning tomorrow. I don't want to do something or say something based on broken heart and potential rage. I want to make sure tomorrow I reflect grace in all the things I do. And I'm really, really concerned. Because, you know, every once in a while you feel it within you. Hurt. Since tomorrow should be zero, let me do it again. I continue to study the issue of reconciliation and so many things. You know, I've mentioned the idea, and I'm continuing to study this, think it through, look at the scripture to see where I can find related items. The idea from Tacitus in the first century, I've wronged you, now I hate you, approximate quote. So I see that idea because, and I'm trying to see if there's, trying to think through if there's really another alternative. It seems to be if an individual or group wrongs a person, there seems to be at least three common, maybe it's basically three results. One is the victim, goes into depression, discouragement, and perhaps self-destructs. And therefore, the perpetrators can say, well, you know, there's evidence he was a bad person in some way, so they can kind of run him off. Or, you know, he disappears and, you know, ends up in, you know, Skid Row kind of thing or whatever. I could see that. The second thing is that the victim seeks revenge. And then the perpetrators can say, aha, look at the revenge he's seeking. He's a bad person and I can feel justified now because of the revenge he's seeking or maybe even, you know, attempting or actually doing. So in both those two cases, the perpetrator has a way to salve their conscience. The thing that's devastating to the perpetrator is that the victim says, I forgive you. Let's reconcile. Then the perpetrator is in a predicament. Because at that point, you have to say, no, I didn't hurt you. No, I didn't. What was done to you was justified. Yes, that's it. It's justified or whatnot. It doesn't work, does it? The only way for the victim, or excuse me, the perpetrator at that point to do the right thing is to reconcile with the victim. You know, and there's obviously a whole lot of scripture in reference, you know, to this. You know, you know, Luke 17. And it's, I have the LSV. I'll use the ESV. And he said to his disciples, temptations to sin are sure to come, but woe to the one through whom they come. It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he was cast in the sea, than he should cause one of these little ones to sin. Pay attention to yourselves. You know, so it's kind of a setup. You know, you don't want to tempt someone to sin. If your brother sins, rebuke him. If he repents, forgive him. Okay, pay attention to yourself. If your brother sins, rebuke him. If he repents, forgive him. That's talking to me. Because my brother sinned against me. Oh, but if he repents, forgive him. Wait a minute. That hasn't happened. And if he sins against you seven times in a day and turns to you seven times saying, I repent, you must forgive him. See, the issue here is my brother sinned against me. And I rebuke him. If he repents, well, he didn't. This includes specifically Jim Cross, Render Keynes, Chris Bitterman, who have a whole bunch of these cards, DVDs, and so forth, emails, and whatnot. You know, it is... We had wonderful discussion in the next part about apostles said to the Lord, increase our faith. And the Lord said, if you had faith like a grain of a mustard seed, you can say this mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea, and it would obey you. And, you know, because one of the things we discuss, hour long, one of the things we discuss is faith or grace or forgiveness. Well, it's not a quantity. It's not when we say increase our faith. It's not that. I don't have 6 units of faith. I don't have 12 units of forgiveness. I don't have 14 units of grace, or you know, things of that nature. It's not something you quantify. Anyway, it's been a marvelous discussion. It is something you do nurture. You nurture your trust in the Lord, and I think one of the ways He does that. You know, one of my fears years ago is after I became a follower of Christ, and I saw some somewhat difficult situations, and I got through them. And I saw, okay, I see the Lord's grace. And I see a growing trust in Him. My concern is the way He's going to increase my trust in Him from this point forward is bring me through more difficult things. You know what it's like to 10 years ago tomorrow, take your sleeping Zadok, carry him outside to a van, place him in a car seat, kiss him goodbye, as well as Walter, Glory Jane, Susanna, George, and I think Julia, I don't know if Jack was there at the time, I think Jack was there. And Tirsa was there. Yeah. Eric Lee wasn't. But to put them in the van and kiss my wife as they went off and drive away. And an hour or two later to find out you're not going to see them for the next 10 years, if not the rest of your life. You know what that does to a man? The apostle said to the Lord, increase your faith. I stumbled. Right now, you know, I've said, if you put a gun to my face, I'm not going to deny Christ. And I've said, you know, I've had a gun pointed at me twice. And I use the line, once by a criminal and once by a cop. But I repeat myself because it's true. Once a criminal pointed a gun at me and once a cop pointed a gun at me. But do you think at this point, if someone said, compromise, and we'll give you health and wealth, we'll give you riches and fame, not a chance. Compromise on Christ, we're going to hurt you, torture you, or kill you. I will not compromise. What can man do to me? My trust is in the Lord. It was hard to get to this point. But I think it's rather obvious. I will not compromise. I'm a follower of Christ. There is no one else for me to follow but Christ. I will not compromise. For my daily bread, or even to get my wife back, I will not compromise. I like to eat, and I love my wife, but I will not compromise. Jesus Christ is the Creator who entered His creation to redeem His elect, and I'm trying to show you evidence. I'm part of His elect. And what happens to His elect? All who desire to follow, who to live a godly life in Christ Jesus, will be persecuted. 2 Timothy 3:12. Do I see persecution? Oh yeah, in many ways. Will I stop proclaiming obedience to Christ? Not a chance. Not until the Lord says, till the Lord says, you have fought the good fight. You have finished the course. You have kept the faith. I can't compromise in order to get to that point. And that's the point I intend to reach unwaveringly. I am less than pure. I will stumble along the way. But I'm confident I'll get there simply because it's not me that's doing it. The only reason I can show love to Jim Cross, Render Keynes, Chris Bitterman, and to my wife and my kids, mostly my wife, it's because the Lord has me. It's not me. It's because the Lord has me. So I got ridiculously long today. I'm going to try to make it not the longest, so I don't have a moment left. But it's very clear. Tomorrow, the 15th anniversary of Collateral Murder, which, kozlowska.org/collateralmurder, the 10th anniversary of my wife saying, I'm not keeping the promise. My wife saying that her quoting of the Book of Common Prayer, for better or worse, rich or poor, sickness and health, till death do you part, she lied. When she says, Dottie Jane loves John, that there was a worldly love, not a love defined by Christ. It is my hope and prayer that the love defined by Christ would come to my wife, and she would seek reconciliation with her husband, with me. I want that literally more than life itself. I've stated before, if a choice was set before me, the easy choice, reconciliation, and you have 5 minutes together, and then my life is over. Would I do that? Absolutely. Would I reconcile with her and 5 minutes later, her life's over and I have 30 more years? To have that reconciliation. It's kind of like, but you're cutting off her life. I would suggest one of the most important things she can do in life is reconcile with me. Would I be willing to live another 30 years alone without her in order to see reconciliation for 5 minutes? Beyond question. Absolutely beyond question. Because I believe, I am convinced, that is the only right course of action for my wife. And I'm quite confident Jim Cross, Render Keynes, and Chris Bitterman will not take me up on that and probably rationalize an excuse for my wife. I would like to see them prove me wrong. My lady, my wife, the woman I love and adore, I've said this repeatedly now. You have my heart, you and you alone. I will not turn from you. I am yours all the days of your life. Romans 7, 1 Corinthians 6, very clear, 6 or 7, very clear. You're bound to me as long as I live. And I'm gratefully bound to you. My wife, I love you and I want you back.